This podcast is supported by Tenderfoot TV. Imagine you're a fly on the wall at a dinner between the mafia, the CIA, and the KGB. That's where the new podcast To Die For begins. Hosted by Neil Strauss, To Die For takes listeners inside the dark and dangerous world of Russian sex espionage, where targets are seduced for their secrets and sometimes their lives. From Tenderfoot TV, the producers of To Live and Die in LA, binge To Die For now on all podcast platforms.
Hey, everyone. It's Estelle Herndon, political reporter for The New York Times. When I became a journalist, I made a promise to my readers, like the way that doctors take an oath to their patients. I committed to bringing the truth to light, no matter which party, business, organization, or person I'm reporting on. I have to be persistent. I have to do research, and I have to push back when someone tries to hide or spin the facts. And I know I'm going to write stories that both Democrats and Republicans don't like. But that's what The New York Times has been doing for more than a century, and that's what we're going to keep doing. We believe the public deserves the right to make up their mind based on the facts. So if you want to support this kind of work, you can subscribe to The New York Times at nytimes.com/subscribe.
Welcome back to The Choice, the presidential endorsement podcast from The New York Times editorial board. I'm Katie Kingsbury. Last episode, you heard the board grill Minnesota Senator Amy Klobuchar. This episode, you'll hear what we had to say once Senator Klobuchar left the room. If you haven't heard the interview, go back and listen to that first. Joining me today to talk about the senator's visit and Minnesota Nice is the longest tenured board member, Mr. Brent Staples.
My name is Brent Staples. I write about politics, culture, economics, race, history, and a whole range of things for the New York Times editorial board.
Before we go all Midwest on you, let's listen to what the board thought of Senator Klobuchar.
So if you go through kind of categories, she obviously has more experience than a lot of these guys. She also has the details, but she didn't go into all
right.
of them here. She knows how the levers work. She knows what levers are at her disposal. She knows how to talk about it. She knew how to address specific policies. She has kind of an ideological theme, which is, you know, beyond the pipe dream and plan, you know, bring people with you. You can't just go in and hammer people. You have to kind of build momentum. She has the cultural argument with the Midwest, and she knows how to tell you the plain-spoken stuff you're talking. So what she is short on is charisma and inspiration, which is speaking a little bit to kind of the early poll numbers. But as far as a lot of the categories go, she has a clearer plus side. It's clearer to see what she's standing for than some of them.
But to Brent's point, she may have a certain type of charisma in her straightforwardness to people in
That will come out as this goes along, because as she rightly notes, when you're dealing with 350 people on stage at any
right.
given point in
she
time,
seems
it's
also,
the loudest or flashiest.
Also, you can see the latent feature of when it's time, she will go for the jugular.
I think that you can see.
That's what surprised me, is like I liked her more than I expected to and felt that more than I expected to. Like
right.
I felt like I could see her on a debate stage with Trump, like holding her own. And when I've watched her in the bigger debates, I did not feel that way.
I mean, she plays more like a governor.
Yeah.
That's what.
I think we saw strengths with her.
You know, this to me, I must tell you, is from where I'm sitting, a kind of charisma. You know, the basic sort of like utilitarian, you know, cut the difference, get it done. And, you know, the allusion to the union, I mean, to the iron belt and everything. I'm telling you, that's a good crit to have.
Really. I think it's interesting, you know, you'd say she played like a governor. I actually had a very different impression of her, which is that she played like a legislator. She was constantly
that was
deferring
the
to the
I
process, constantly saying that the key is to create a legislative package. I think those are important skills, and I actually don't know exactly where I come down on this, but another version of a president is that that's the person who articulates a strong vision and tries to inspire people and to lead people in that direction and knows where they want to go and is able to accomplish something by virtue of that. And so I do worry a little bit about, you know, this mentality of basically like, we need to talk to everyone and figure out what everyone wants and then we'll put together a compromise. It feels to me like that is definitely how you are effective in Congress. I wonder if it's how you're effective.
Well, if she were sitting here, she'd say, I've already said I'm going to do 100 things.
But I mean, you should read that list. A lot of that is like, I'm going to reverse what Trump did yesterday. Mm-hmm. It's not that impressive a list of 100 things. I mean, there are real things on the list, but, you know.
I want to let Charlie jump in here.
I thought one issue that spoke to a lot of this that was interesting to me was talking about guns and then talking about the failures and the failures and the failures and then the Parkland kids, but also in with her sort of like moderate type of position. The Parkland kids are like a very radical like situation. It was a very like there's no tolerance for this. It was like it felt kind of different, and she kept talking about the failures of that sort of like consensus, try to work with everyone approach, and then there's this outrage from this other side. And I don't know, I felt the same way that I was really overwhelmed by all like the bill name dropping. I didn't feel that sense of charisma really. Like I didn't feel that sense of, I felt that sense of leadership in like a technocratic way, but I didn't feel it in the room the way I felt with certain other candidates.
I think she's selling stability, which I think is something that, given the Trump era, a lot of Americans want, right? Like, a lot of people want stability again. I agree with you. I think that does resonate with older voters more than it resonates with younger voters. But I agree with you. I mean, I think that one of the reasons that we didn't have to ask her repeatedly about Mitch McConnell's Senate is because she has a plan for that. And, like, that was clear in, like, the first few, you know, minutes of her talking. But everyone has said this several times. She doesn't inspire you the same way. Is the urgency there?
Yeah, well, I think, was it Warren who came in and said, well, listen, my fear is I'm not going to get everything done, but at least I've aimed here. And so where do you want to start your negotiating point?
Yes, I agree with you. I also think that, like, to go back to something Janine said, I do think some of her plans are bolder than they seem on paper.
Right.
Because, we have gotten to this point where we hear people like Bernie and Elizabeth Warren and others talking in such sweeping terms that even some of the plans that she has, which would be move the country forward in a lot of important ways. I mean, particularly around
public option. People forget that was so controversial during Obama's administration that they had to drop it from the Affordable Care Act. And now we take it for granted as like, oh, that's like the weak sauce relative to Medicare for all.
Right.
Exactly. I consider it progress that the debate has moved that far, but that doesn't mean that a public option isn't actually a huge leap forward and wouldn't be a strenuous lift. It would.
There's a lot of good here.
Yeah.
There's a lot of good here.
And I want to applaud the focus on home health care workers, which I think is the correct diagnosis and the correct frame for dealing with that.
So, Brent, what were your impressions of Senator Klobuchar?
I was surprised at how much I liked her when we met in person, because I think the charisma, the Midwestern charisma that she has, didn't come through in the debates, you know. But in person, you get a sense, a real sense of a solid, committed person with some basic ideas that she knows how to present in a straightforward way. And I spent a lot of time in the Midwest in Iowa and her neighboring state right next to Minnesota. So her way of speaking resonates deeply with me.
Yeah, you and I are both not from the Midwest, but we have a lot of family there. And so I think that Midwestern affect really comes through with her. I mean, how does that compare to, for instance, Mayor Pete?
Mm-hmm. Well, I see Mayor Pete as he is the young guy in the campaign. And his appeal is primarily his youth in the context of a field that's really, you know, tilted toward octogenarians almost, you know. And he has a similar kind of affect when you meet him. You can identify him as Midwestern. It doesn't have the sort of soaring rhetoric is not there, but you get a sense of basics with him, too.
Do you think being from a state like Minnesota is a boon in this particular election year?
I do. I think that for a woman like Klobuchar, a candidate like Klobuchar, a three-term senator from a solid Midwestern state who plays well in conservative areas, plays well with laborers, plays well with miners and steel workers and those kinds of people. I think that's it's a very translatable skill. One of the sort of mysteries of campaigning is why a person that has so many features, so many desirable features, doesn't break through. You know, but I have to tell you, I have been looking for her to break through in her neighboring state in Iowa because she has the kind of communication skills and the Midwestern personality that on paper should play big there. You know, so it's translatable to the Midwest. And she's made that point very effectively that, in fact, she wins on the Dakota side. She wins on the Iowa side. She wins in the Iron Range. That's a very powerful record.
Yeah, I agree with you. Although one of the questions I think that is still very open is how well she'll do with communities of color.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think that's we got to remember that communities of color are particularly pragmatic people. And if we think back to 2008, how people in South Carolina in the South, in the Black Belt in the South, were hewing toward Hillary Clinton as opposed to Obama, until he won Iowa. You know, that picture could change very quickly depending on how the election plays out. Because people begin to focus more as you become more plausible. In South Carolina, Obama became plausible after Black people in South Carolina saw that white people in Iowa would vote for him.
It's funny you mentioned John Kerry before, because I think, like, when people spend a certain amount of time marinating in the Senate, they become creatures of the Senate, and everything that they see about the world and understand is sort of seen through a lens of an incredibly dysfunctional body of governing in the United States that has, like, some real problems. And, you know, I was trying to get at my question about Afghanistan is for her to take some sort of responsibility that the Senate has, you know, led to a lot of the problems that we're seeing in sort of in the national dysfunction. And, you know, if everything you see is sort of a, you know, through your eyes as a senator, that can be a tough sort of pivot.
I wrote Creature of D.C.
Yeah, I wrote Senate Creature here, Creature of the Senate.
Can we talk about other blind spots or weaknesses that Senator Klobuchar has?
Well, as we all know, it takes a while in every campaign cycle for a candidate to become a finished product. You know, she's talking about the basic issues here. She's talking about medical care. She's talking about wages. She's talking about bread and butter issues for people. These messages will translate. They will play. They will travel. I think what some people are saying is that she needs to be able to weave these together in a story that has a slightly higher level rhetoric. You know,
a vision. She needs to present a vision.
And I think you call it a vision. Sometimes I call it in a campaign the melody. Her factual presentation is indisputable. She's a very solid Midwestern person and very appealing, but she does need sort of a higher melody, I think.
More from our deliberations after a quick break.
Over the last 25 years, the world has witnessed incredible progress, from dial-up modems to 5G connectivity, from massive PC towers to AI-enabled microchips. Innovators are rethinking possibilities every day. Through it all, Invesco's QQQ ETF has provided investors access to the world of innovation. Be a part of the next 25 years of new ideas by supporting the fund that gives you access to innovative companies. Invesco QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. There are risks when investing in ETFs, including possible loss of money. ETFs' risks are similar to those of stocks. Investments in the tech sector are subject to greater risk and more volatility than more diversified investments. Before investing, carefully read and consider fund investment objectives, risks, charges, expenses, and more in prospectus at Invesco.com. Invesco Distributors, Inc.
This is A.O. Scott. I'm a critic at The New York Times. What I do and what the other critics here do is part of the same project that all of the journalists at The New York Times work on every day to give you clarity and perspective and, above all, a deeper understanding of the world. When you subscribe to The New York Times, it's not just here are the headlines, but here's the way everything fits together. If you'd like to subscribe, please go to nytimes.com/subscribe.
Welcome back to The Choice. One of the things that I was very impressed with her is that she talks about these issues in a way that people can relate to their lived experiences.
Right, right, right.
So for an example, on climate change, you hear her talk about the flooding in Iowa or other places in a way where people can really relate immediately the policies that she's putting on the table to what they themselves have experienced.
Yes, that's true. And, you know, as a person who travels back and forth to Iowa quite a bit myself, I do see that. But we're just trying to what will it take for her to break through is what I'm thinking.
I think one of the other issues that she has been plagued with has been the reporting around the fact that she has the highest Senate turnover rate. You know, that gives me pause because you want the next president to be able to surround themselves with really talented people. And if she has that reputation, if she doesn't treat her staff well, will the talented people want to work for her? Mm-hmm. What do you make of that?
Well, I have to tell you, whenever I hear of a temperament problem, I always subtract some of the complaint from gender, through gender. I always take a gender quotient right off the top of that. Because a lot of people who would put up with behavior from men quite nicely and think of it as aggressive and hard driving, or tend to think of women as shrill if they exhibit the same behavior. The turnover statistics, are potentially troubling, but I remember when she was here, we discussed it, and she said, listen, a lot of my staff go on to great things. I drive them hard, but I choose people who don't stay with me because they go on to greater things. As our colleague David Leonhardt said recently, that she reminds him a little bit of Harry Truman, which is also sort of a very blunt guy, no-nonsense guy, who turned out to be quite an effective president.
The central case for the senator seems to be, and the case I think she's been making to the country, is that the crisis, the political crisis, can be met with an adult in the room and some moderation and a Midwestern view and sensibility. And listen, I think that's it's worth taking seriously. I don't know whether anybody knows if that's actually enough.
If any of these Democrats are elected, what they're promising would make them the most progressive president in American history. Mm-hmm. I often think of her as the person who might actually be able to get that done because of her effectiveness in passing bipartisan bills in Congress. But she does have a little bit of a tendency to name off those bills, to talk through the legislation and make herself seem a little bit like a DC creature. Do you think that would go away as she moved away from Congress?
I think that this is in the realm of rhetorical problems. I think it is possible to solve this problem by simply learning to speak differently about what you're trying to do. As a person who's on the floor in the Senate, a successful three-term senator, she is likely to be engaged in the nuts and bolts of the Senate itself. But as the campaign unfolds, she should be able to pull back from that. I'm sure she's getting that input now. She should be able to pull back from that and to take a slightly broader rhetorical scope. I think it's mainly just a rhetorical problem.
Thank you so much for doing this, Brent.
Thank you for having me.
All right. That's it for Senator Klobuchar. Come back on Monday to hear the board teach South Bend Mayor Pete Buttigieg about just what the Mayo Pete meme is.
The Choice is produced by At Will Media. Mitch Bluestein, Molly Socha, Ashley Taylor, and Rachel Leitner, with help from Michelle Mason. Mixing by Lauren Gardner, and original music by Allison Leighton Brown. Special thanks to Tyson Evans from The New York Times. Our executive producers are Will Malnati from At Will Media and Phoebe Lett from The New York Times. Finally, we want to hear from you. Please rate and review us on the Apple Podcasts app. It'll help more voters find the show.